This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Hello and welcome to Been There, Done That, Joy 94.9, our first episode for 2018. Fancy that, where did that last year go? I ask myself, and I also, who is Chris, and I also ask that of Gordon.
Well, all I can say is Happy New Year, and I hope everybody has recovered sufficiently.
And Phil, what do you
I reckon 2017 went poof.
Well,
it went as fast as it came.
It certainly did. Ah, indeed, Gordon. Yes. Did you survive?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I'm doesn't really worry me that much.
There's something redundant in that question.
Why?
Did you survive?
Did I survive?
If yes. The answer's no, there's no answer.
There's no answer. But no, it was fine. It was a very quiet night because I don't bother with all that nonsense about things coming in on the first day of the new year and all that nonsense.
What about the fireworks? Do you like those?
They usually wake me up. I can hear them down in Hampton. They're so bloody loud.
Oh, wow.
I think Gordon thinks that midnight's very late in the day.
Well, I'm not a night person.
No, you're one of these silly people who wake up at 4 a.m.
Yeah. And that does. And go for it, yeah.
And Phil, how did your young Eddie cope with the fireworks?
He likes fireworks. Because we've had our thunder training where we turned it into a game.
All
so instead right. of being scared, we get a little waggy tail when we hear thunder.
Wow.
And lightning is right up there, or thunder and lightning are right up there with fireworks.
So he sits in front of the great big plate glass window thinking it's a supersized TV.
Well, actually, in Blackburn, we don't hear any fireworks because we're too far from the city.
No, but when there's a thunderstorm on?
The last one. He sat on his chair and this little tail just wagged, just ever so slightly.
Oh, good. Isn't that nice? Yeah. Eddie's a very brave little boy.
Well, he is. He used to hide behind the couch.
Yeah, but now he sits on the chair and waves his tail.
Yeah.
That's
now,
good.
What about his separation anxiety when you have to leave him?
That we've got a system and it fell down on Christmas Day. Because what I do is I give him his favourite food in a little tray. And he's supposed to be preoccupied with that and not notice me walk out the door. And that works 99% of the time. I figured it's Christmas Day, I'll give him a treat. So I give him one of these little cans and he looks at me as if to say, don't go. And he had a little nibble and he just had his eyes on me all morning. It took nearly half a day for him to eat that one little tray.
But that's unusual because it was a Monday. Christmas Day was a Monday.
Yeah.
And you would have thought that Eddie would have been prepared, you know, sort of know the day that you go away, you know, because they...
I'm not too sure how they go on a weekly basis. They do know about time because I know if I've been away too long, he'll be sitting on my couch as opposed to his chair.
Yeah, get
just as a little payback.
Right.
He doesn't do anything on the couch, which is good.
No, well, that's good, yeah.
Well, have you got any New Year's resolutions, Gordon?
No, don't make them.
Why not?
Don't believe in it.
How can you not believe that we've come to the end of 1 year? You've got to wipe your slate clean so that you can start to be a bastard, but all for a new, all fresh again.
I don't have a slate. I have a computer. I'm more up to date than slates, mate. But no, I've never ever made New Year's resolutions because such a big percentage of people make New Year's resolutions and never keep them.
Well,
because they try to make too big a resolution.
Well, that's right. It's a well-known fact that most of them fail within the first month,
yeah.
If not the first week.
But they say if you do it in small steps, like to say, I'm going to plan to lose a kilo of weight a week.
Yeah.
And do that. Not say I'm going to lose weight and do all this, that nonsense, but to do it very slowly and carefully is the way to go. But I've never been a smoker. I've never been a big drinker. I've never had to give up anything that I didn't like. And so, you know, yeah. I'm just such a goody two-shoes, you've got no idea.
Yes, I'm giving up gambling and murder.
Oh, good. You don't approve of them, no?
No.
Yeah. I just wish my boyfriend would give up gambling sometimes.
Oh, right. Well, where did this all come from, I wonder?
I blame the church. There's got to be a church there somewhere.
I think it's probably before churches came along. Well, now, the Chinese have got a system, haven't they, Gordon?
Well, they celebrate Lunar New Year, and it is on the 16th of February this year. And they have a system where they have to have everything nice and clean and tidy, and they will go to church. They will pray to their ancestors, basically, because it's part of their religion, is their ancestry. And so that they do that for the thing. But
I understand the Scots have got a little bit of a carry on at the end of a year.
They have Hogmanay.
Hogmanay
is the thing, and they have a system where the house has to be perfectly clean. Everything has to be washed and scrubbed and cleaned and done everything with, and so that when you enter the new year at Hogmanay, you have a very clean house.
But hogs aren't known to be very clean animals. They act like
Many of them must be all right. So there's
Hog money. Yeah, but they also have other things. That the first foot for the new year has to be somebody with dark hair, and they carry a lump of coal or something or other in their hand. They have a whole lot of traditions for Hog money.
What's
as
that
well.
One called? Tumen Mornay. Is that Tumen Mornay?
Human Mornay. Yes. Yeah. Tuna Mornay.
Yes.
Yes. No, but it's the Scottish people are my. I told you the story before about my mother's bridesmaid. One year, she had still had some washing that wasn't done and clean, so she took it outside and burnt it.
Wow,
that's efficient.
So she didn't. She didn't have anything dirty in her house.
Think of a Scottish winter; you'd have a lot of time on your hands.
This was in Darwin, so it was pretty hot, so it didn't matter.
Mm. Yeah. The Romans apparently began each year by making promises to the god
Janus. January.
For whom the month of January is named. Mm. And, of course, Janus actually looked forward and backwards. Looked backwards.
He has a two-headed man, yeah.
Or two-faced.
Two-faced. With a lot of people
ever.
Would have had a lot of fun with his name in school.
Yeah.
There comes Janus the Anus.
Thank you very much.
But it's there are so many different things that apply around the new year.
It's a time for reflection upon,
yeah, well,
wouldn't I like to be better than last year? I mean, now we've got a new year. All those things I buggered up on during 2017, wouldn't like to repeat those, so I'll learn from my mistakes. And, I was a bit cross and cranky with people there. Perhaps I can make up to them and we can pick up where we left off.
Yeah, there's a few people that I get cross and cranky with that I can't do anything about that. I'm going to be cross and cranky next year as well, or this year as well.
My saying would be, Happy New Year, or as I call it, Monday.
Monday. But it's
a sort of a reset button.
Sort of, I suppose, for a lot of people, it's become a thing to do that. It's
we'll call them the delusional.
Oh, all right.
If they think they can just put a line in the sand and jump over it.
Well, it's the of course it comes from the Gregorian calendar, of course, which they did the when they changed over from the Julian calendar to the Gregorian calendar, because they had 365 days and a quarter, which is why we have the leap year on the every fourth year with the 29th of February. But it's just the timing of all this thing, which is very interesting, because they were talking about, I watched a television program, they're not talking about time and how they worked out where the moon was going to be with the sun to give you full eclipses.
Oh, yeah.
And that they and I was sitting there, they said, so how long ago when did they work this out? And I sat and screamed at the thing. The Babylonians did it 2,000 years ago, and the man sort of repeated exactly what I said. Well, the Babylonians did it 2,000 years ago. So they were working on time then.
By the rivers of Babylon.
Mm. Yeah, the Eastern mystics.
That's right.
They were mathematicians.
And it's very interesting that what they could do in those days with the things that they had to add up and subtract and multiply and divide.
Oh, now the abacus and those sorts of things.
Yeah, those sort of materials.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know how. Mm.
They had plenty of time, though, because they didn't have TV.
Well, that's right.
They had lots of time to think.
Yes, and have children. Yes.
And of course, that's a handheld calculating device, the abacus.
Abacus, yes, yes. Have you ever watched somebody that really knows how to use one of those, like a Chinese person or somebody that is trained with an abacus? Their fingers and the buttons go so fast, you wonder, what the hell are they doing? You know, they just...
And they got the answer.
The beads are flying backwards and forwards.
42.
And yeah. Or 54.
No, 42 is the ultimate answer to the ultimate question of life, the universe, yeah, and everything.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Okay. It's
from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Oh, good. Yes, we
And 54, what's that to do with?
To disco 50, in New York.
Disco. Oh, all right then.
And car, where are you?
Oh, car 54. How many of our audience would remember that show from, early 60s?
Early 60s, I would have thought, yes, yes. Yeah.
Of course, kids have had their exams in the last couple of months, and now the future is before them.
That's right.
Yep. So I suppose it's a good opportunity for them to think the new year is the beginning again of life outside school.
I think most of you'll find that most of the young people these days, when they do leave school after year 12, they have some idea of where they want to go and what they want to do. You know, some people will not, but a lot of people are being forced to do things that they don't really want to do. Like, you've got to go to university. No, you don't. If you don't have that sort of brain, you don't go to university. Don't waste your time. Go and get a job.
You can still have 10 different degrees and still get a job where your comment is, would you like fries with that?
That's right.
And, of course, who are the rich wage earners or salary earners?
The tradesmen.
Tradesmen. Plumbers.
Plumbers, carpenters, all these people.
You know, the plumbers who are up to their wrists in other people's...
Rubbish.
business.
Yep.
Well, see, we're in construction zone at the moment, so all our plumbers are quite clean because they're putting in new plumbing.
Mm-hmm.
And all the tradies... Actually, it's different from site to site. You have middle-aged tradies and their visa workers doing the actual work. And then on some sites, you've got all these beautiful boys in their mid-20s. Can't wait to get their shirts off and wearing the shorts and them those lovely legs going up and down those ladders.
Then they get sunburnt and finish up with melanoma. Yeah, it's a good idea.
Yeah, I'm talking eye candy. I can't help everything.
Thank you, Philip. You're with Phil, Chris and Gordon. Been there, done that. Joy 94.9. Stay tuned. There's more.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLB, TIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
You're with Gordon, Phil and Chris. Been there, done that. Joy 94.9. Thanks for being with us. We appreciate your little massages and everything. And a little later, we'll be hoping that our little woofer friends that listen in also have a pleasant new year.
Or had one.
Well, no.
They've still got the whole year to go.
It's not new. Today
is new and tomorrow is new because it's the first. I think everything is new until the end of January, isn't it? When you,
I'm still going to get used to riding 2018.
Yeah, no, that's the problem. Yeah.
I'm still waiting to buy my hot cross buns.
They're in the shops.
Ashwood, in the paper this morning, it said Ashwood.
Yep.
There you go.
Already there.
I don't live in Ashwood.
On Boxing Day, they were in the store in Ashwood, somebody wrote in.
And they're not even hot.
No.
No, you've got to pay for them.
They're just cross.
You've got to
they're
pay
cross
them.
Buns.
Mm-hmm. Did I found out the best joke for 2017, and it concerned the Pope and Mr. Trump.
Oh, yeah.
And they were discussing who was the most popular person in the world, or the best known person in the world. And they were standing on the balcony overlooking the Vatican Square there, or whatever it is, St. Peter's Square. And the Pope said, look, he said, I can just raise my hand here and wave it. And everybody in that audience, those 200,000 people standing down there, will remember it for the rest of their lives. And Donald Trump said, oh, I'd like to see that happen. So the Pope slapped him.
Yes.
Okay, didn't see that one coming. But
no, you didn't, did you? I just thought that was one of the best jokes of the year. So the Pope slapped him. And, of course, the 200,000 people would remember it, wouldn't they?
They would have also cheered.
Yeah, it could have been. But anyhow, that reminds me about a very, very talented man that had a lot to do with bit of religion in one way or another.
Yes. Now, we're talking about Graham Chapman, the UK actor and the Monty Python member. Member of Monty Python, and he is the author, co-author of the Parrot sketch.
Oh, that was considered the greatest comedy sketch of all time for quite a while until Little Britain came along.
Well, if you don't know the Parrot sketch, I'm sorry, we can't repeat it here.
The Dead Parrot sketch.
Dead Parrot sketch it was. Yeah. All about going into a pet shop to buy a parrot, and all he had was this dead one for sale. It's not dead, it's just resting.
That's right, yes. Very, very funny.
But the religious angle that you were talking about was Graham Chapman. He was a very naughty boy.
Oh, very, very naughty.
He was in the film The Life of Brian, which was...
Which he wrote.
And it was not a send-up of Christianity.
Actually, he used quotes from the Bible to create scenes where those were said, but in another way.
Yeah.
So that, like, it was just something different. It
wasn't sacrilegious.
No, he just...
It's just a very naughty boy.
Yes.
So is this a quote from the Bible? I'll thump you if you call me Big Nose again.
I'm not quite sure, but he just that's where he got it all from. It is a very funny film, and of course everybody was condemning it. All the churches were condemning it, and they hadn't even seen it.
Oh,
you know, which made everybody go and see it. When you have this censorship, people want to go and see why it's being censored.
But that's where the Catholic Church can be your best friend. Billy Joel was giving a speech to university students. And he had a song called Only the Good Die Young.
Mm-hmm.
And the opening line is, Catholic girls start much too late. Sooner or later, it comes down to fate. He said, the church banned it, and I got a platinum album out of it.
It's what happens. Yeah. You ban anything, and people want to look at what happened.
What's forbidden fruit?
Well, like Prohibition in America, where you had you couldn't buy alcohol. And what where the speakeasies and the people like Al Capone and those sort of people made millions of dollars out of supplying them with rotgut, you know? So it's...
But they eventually figured out that they had to legalise it again because nothing had changed.
But Brian Chapman was he made so much...
Graham Chapman,
I beg your pardon, made so much money out of The Life of Brian that he became the first Python to become a tax exile. Oh. He couldn't live in Britain. He had too much money. So I think he went to live in Switzerland or somewhere where they had less tax base.
But Graham Chapman... apart from being a comic, was also a gay man. And that didn't seem to upset the workings of the Python group. And it seemed, though, that along with being gay, Graham Chapman had this lovely twisted sense of humour.
Very twisted.
and he liked to be outrageous, and he would do this in various ways, of which we can't report here on the radio.
Well, you could do the one about when he lost his wallet and went to the police station.
Well, that's right. He wrote the sketch where one of the other actors, Michael Palin, reported a lost wallet to a policeman and then calmly propositioned him by asking him, do you want to come back to my place?
Yes, but that was taken from real life, from Graham Chapman's real life.
He picked up two young policemen and took them taken home. Them back to his flat in Hampstead. Now, that's real life being represented here.
He wrote that into a script then, into the Monty Python. Very talented man. He finished up dying of cancer in 1989, I think it was.
But he was born on the 8th of January, 1941.
Oh. He was born a bit after the other person that was actually born on the 1st of January, and they got a cleaner named after him.
Not quite. He has the same name as a vacuum cleaner company.
Oh. I know that. Mr. Hoover, J. Edgar.
Jedgar.
Jedgar Hoover. As
Lily Tomlin.
Lily Tomlin, you just call him Jedgar Hoover.
The lovely gay comedian.
Yes.
So is he part of Jedwood?
No, I don't think so. He doesn't have the hair for it.
Not quite cute enough.
As the director of FBI, he had to be a nasty guy for a lot of the things to counteract the people that he interacted with in the criminal scene. He had to be as nasty as them.
But he had secret files on everybody that anybody. The presidents, from the president down, he had secret files on everybody.
And he must have been so busy that he didn't have time for what we would call a private life or a family life. So he had to actually incorporate his affairs under the banner of being the FBI boss.
He was absolutely beholden to his mother, which was the problem. His father died of a mental illness. His father was mentally ill and died in an asylum somewhere. And his mother was a very, very strict religious person.
And she said at one stage, I'd rather have a dead son than a daffodil for a son.
Yes, that's right, because when he didn't make up his mind about something, yeah. So he doted on his mother. And when she died, apparently, he put on her dress and makeup the day after she died. So he was sort of...
Reminds me of a movie called Psycho.
Sort of a bit, doesn't it? But he also had a long-term relationship with his second in charge.
His associate.
His associate, Mr. Tolson. And actually, they are buried together side by side.
But it was a well-known fact, Herbert Evans, that they were sort of hand in hand.
That's right. Well, they were holding hands in one thing you read about them. There was a lady in the car with them. They'd gone to a nightclub. The Cotton Club, actually, and while they were going there, J. Edgar Hoover was holding Clyde Tolson's hand in the car, and she said she'd never seen men holding hands. And so she asked the driver, and he said, oh, well, you should know about them, inferring that they were queer.
But publicly, he waged a vendetta against gay people. So what's going on in his head?
Oh, a lot must have gone on in his head because he was the head of the FBI for so bloody long.
Well, I suppose...
But he didn't call himself gay.
But he was of that group, the different group of men who like sex with men. Or his friend Tolson was the other person, just getting close and personal with the only guy that he could get close and personal with.
So we put it under the category of it's complicated.
Yes, that's right. But when he died, his private secretary burnt all his files. She destroyed all his files, his private files, because the FBI came looking for them. And when they went to Edgar Hoover's offices, they found nothing in the files because she destroyed them all. She knew what was in them, so she destroyed them all. With all the records of what people had been doing left, right and centre for years, he was a bit of a nasty pasty.
See it now, the music in the background is thanks for the memories. Yes. Shredding away.
But he was born on the 1st of January in 1895.
It's interesting that people in high places can hide their sexuality or gender preference behind the cloak of respectability.
But it was a different time in that people knew about President Kennedy's affairs.
Oh, yeah.
But it wasn't headline news.
No, that's right. But then when you look at the royal family, how many gay people have been in the royal family over the years, and I was watching that thing about Mrs. Simpson the other night, and the press did not mention one word about Mrs. Simpson and Edward for a long, long time.
No.
And it turned out that Mrs. Simpson wasn't the woman that they all sort of said she was, because she wanted him to stop seeing her and become the king.
Yeah.
And I was looking at him saying, thank God he didn't. And became king, because we got a better monarch after the
lot of it. Oh, that's
right.
I mean, I think he was referred to as a wanting child.
Yes, he was. His father said he was like a 10-year-old idiot.
Yeah.
You know, and that was Edward VII. You know.
Golly gosh, there we are.
So there's still hope for Harry.
There's still hope
for
Harry.
Oh, yeah.
Well, he's all right now because he's about sixth in line now for the throne.
Yes,
he's dropping down.
But he's offended his in-laws just the other day.
Did he?
He was being interviewed on radio about how his fiancée is coping with
being royal,
the royal family. And he said, oh, it's like the family she never had.
Oh, dear.
Now, he would have gotten that impression because there was divorce and all sorts of things in the past. But he would have gotten that impression from her. But her sister took to social media and said a few things correct.
Right. Yeah, but
so, live and learn.
It's easy to hide. If you're, as you mentioned before, Chris, if you're well-known and famous, it's easier to hide lots of things than it is from, you know.
Although life is changing.
Life is changing. With social media, you can't get away with much
these days. That's right. So, you know, we're looking back to a certain extent.
Yeah.
A little bit of deja vu. Stay tuned. There's more.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
You're with Gordon, Chris and Phil. Been there, done that. Joy 94.9.
Happy New Year?
We can say Happy New Year. Yeah. All right, then. We won't say it next year.
No, we won't.
No, next week.
No, we won't. Because
we will say it next year when it is appropriate.
Well, that's as long as we're all still here. We'll say Happy New Year, yes.
We've had a bit of reports in the newspapers of people getting into trouble in the seawater, getting caught and ripped, people not used to swimming in fresh water and sinking out of sight. And
Chris, you realise that when you read who they were, they're people that are not used to swimming in our waters.
True.
They come from international people that go. They don't understand that that's why those flags are there. That's where you swim between.
What flags?
Well, the flags, the lifesavers flags.
Ah.
So that's where they know where the rips are and they know that everything is fine in that section of water and that's where you should swim.
So they're made out of fruit flavoured candy.
Yeah, something like that, yeah. Lifesavers.
So my favourite lifesavers.
Sweetie with a hole in it.
Ones I can suck on.
Ah, right. But it's amazing. There was an invention that happened. An Australian invention that actually saves lives in the ocean. And we're talking about the life-saving reel.
Back in the 3rd of January 1907,
yep.
The Manly City Council prohibited swimming in the ocean during daylight hours. But then when the law was defied three times, a newspaper proprietor, Henry, was arrested. And drew attention to the situation that people needed to be able to swim in daytime.
Yeah, because you might have got taken by a noah at night time, wouldn't you?
Well, at night, exactly.
You wouldn't see them coming, but you'd disappear pretty quick.
Of course, Aussie Bum or Speedo hadn't created swimmers at that stage of the game. They were still neck to knee.
Well, they had from neck to knee. That's what you had to swim in, yes.
But in 1903, the Bronte Beach Surf Club in Sydney was formed, and they were starting to rescue the people now swimming during daylight hours in the surf of the Sydney beaches.
Well, that meant that the lifesaver had to be a damn good swimmer to get out to the person that was in trouble and then bring them back in by himself. And they had to work out a system of how to get the lifesaver out to the person and get them back safely.
The earliest things was just a rope.
That's right, yeah.
Tied at one end in the sand and a little hook on the other, and he would take that out and try and catch the person and drag them back in.
Somebody would drag them back in, yeah. And that's when
The coiled rope on the reel and with trained personnel and the harness that actually was used to bring back the person who's been in trouble. It was all part of the new concept of surf life-saving.
Mm.
And that was invented in Australia. But I wonder who was the first person to be rescued.
I know.
Yes, okay. With a hand in the air. Yes, boy.
He was an 8-year-old boy who went by the name of Charlie Kingsford Smith.
Charlie.
Now, at 8 years old, he wasn't Sir Charles.
And he didn't.
He hadn't flown anything yet. But that's local legend states that he was the first person rescued,
yeah. But since then, how many thousands of people have our wonderful lifesavers around the beaches? And it's interesting that they're advertising on the television lately about lifesavers and warning people about what to do in the surf, you know.
Well, I think it's also interesting that one of those warning adverts on TV says, the surf doesn't discriminate. Doesn't matter what your ethnicity is, what your sexuality is.
Where you've come from or what you do. The rip will take you. But I did hear that the best thing to do is you never fight a rip. You just float out with it. You go with it, let it take you. Lay on your back and let it take you out.
Well, you've got two options. You can do that and put your hand up and hope somebody sees you.
That's right.
Or instead of fighting it to try to swim to shore,
you
go left or right.
You swim across it.
Because it can't bite you. Yeah. And they're usually very narrow because it's huge. The water. The waves have come in and they've got to go out again.
That's right.
And they create rip.
Something a bit like the rip down here at the bottom of the bay. Have you ever been out there in the rip? When the tide's going out? By God, does that water go?
I've never thought.
I have sailed down there out of Sorrento when the water's been going out of the rip and we had to throw out the anchor to anchor the boat into the to stop it from going out and then pull the rope in so we went a bit further away from where the strength of the water going out was. It was quite scary because
my response would have been, "Hello, sailor."
Well, we knew what to do, but it wouldn't have mattered had we been sucked out of the thing, because the boat that I was on would have been capable of surviving out on the...
Might have bumped into Tasmania.
No, not quite. Not quite.
Talking about sucking.
Yeah.
Drawing fluid out of a bottle.
Oh, that's been going around for centuries. That started in...
Without tipping the bottle upside down.
Yeah, that's right. That started in Samaria way back...
What, some area near Melbourne? No. Or some area over there?
Samaria is in the Middle East.
Oh, some area.
Samaria. Yeah, they used to suck beer out of a bottle using a hollow reed, because when the old days when they brewed beer, there was always sediment in the bottom of the bottle. So they decided the easiest way would be to drink it through this reed,
yeah.
And then they wouldn't get the mouth full of all the rubbish that's in the bottom.
But talking about solutions being found for a problem that you didn't really know that you had, the gentleman in the cigarette paper factory...
He got sick of the problem and said, "This is the last straw." And it actually became the first straw.
Became the first straw. Yes, he made it out of rolled up paper and wax and glued it all together and all the rest of it. Invented a system to make a drinking straws, and he painted it.
That's what you do with your artwork.
That's right, it is, yeah.
You painted that picture.
Oh, good, yes.
But you can't patent a picture.
No, you can't, no.
You can copyright a picture.
Yeah, that's about all you can do. But that was painted on this day. not on this day, but it was on...
3rd of January 1888 by Marvin Chester Stone.
Right. Now, he's an American by the name, I would imagine.
I would think so. Yes, it was in America. Yeah.
Washington, D.C.
But the people still used to always just use a reed or something rather to drink the... water out of the bottle or something.
At the time of his invention, straws used for drinking liquids were made from ryegrass and tended to give drinks a grassy flavour.
But it would be, wouldn't it?
Yummy.
Yeah, add a bit of flavour.
It's okay if you're a cow.
But this was cigarette paper, then he waxed it and it was rolled in a spiral fashion.
Mm. He rolled it around a pen. Or a pencil.
He did, he did. Mm. And that was marvellous concept. As you were saying earlier, Phil, now there was something that kids could use for spitball.
Spitballs, yes. You put a spitball in there and up to the ceiling of the schoolroom, yes.
Or the back of the teacher's head.
Oh, no,
if you had enough breath, you could get him. If you were sitting in the back of the room, it was a bit of a way.
Oh, but also around about this time, there was another marvellous invention.
I had a feeling you would bring this up.
On the 4th of January, 1809, a long time ago...
But boy, didn't it help a hell of a lot of people.
It did, and we're talking about the raised dot system of representing letters in a word.
They're invented by Louis Braille, who was blind himself, and he was an 8-year-old child, and he saw a system where they would, during the war, they would send raised dot messages to the men in the forces in the front line so that they could read them in the dark. And he thought, this is an ideal thing for blind people. He was only 8, and he invented a system of 6 dots, because there are so many combinations in 6 dots that you can get...
6 dots.
Only 6. You can get 26 letters out of 6 dots, and that's what he did. Every dot, the way it was raised, represented a letter.
No, the math is it's 1 times 2 times 3 times 4 times 5 times 6.
All right.
Whatever that is, that's the number of combinations.
Right, well...
And permutations.
Well, right, yeah. Okay, so he only had 6 dots and he had plenty of time with 26.
Well, your letters. Computer keyboard uses 7 dots.
Is it 7 in the keyboard?
And it's called ASCII, and it's the American System for Communication Interchange.
Oh, right, well. So...
And it's much the same as Braille in that there's a code...
Of dots.
Which is actually it's a decimal number converted to binary, and they're the dots, so the ones and zeros.
Oh, the ones and zeros that okay, right.
Ah.
Okay, so actually that's been taken from the same system that Louis Braille used.
Well, without Braille, computers would have taken longer to develop.
Well, there you go.
Because they had a system of coding.
Yeah. Mm. So what was ticker tape? Was that punched out?
I'm almost embarrassed to say a technology that I first worked with.
I think it was like the reverse of Braille.
Yeah.
Well, it is. See, ASCII codes. See, when I started in the newspaper publishing business,
yeah,
your article would be printed out on paper tape.
Yes.
Because you didn't have a floppy disk yet.
Yeah.
And that was the ASCII code representing the A's and B's and C's and the various, you know, keyboard options. And the hardest part of that is to read the tape. You had to get an incandescent bulb, which were made in Sweden, from memory. They cost $35 each, and it had a filament that was a perfectly straight line.
Oh, right.
Which you would align over the reader.
Yeah.
So that when the hole went past, the computer would say, oh, that's a one or that's a zero. And we as the apprentices used to get the job of aligning this bulb without breaking it. And at 17, I think I lost a few.
Oh, did you? Oh, dear, oh,
fumble,
dear, oh, dear.
Fumble fingers.
That's right.
fumble fingers, Phil.
But, yeah, that's very early computer storage. Yeah. And the punch cards were the next, so you could write your program
on the punch card
and then have them fed sequentially.
Yeah.
And fortunately, those systems died out.
That's good, yeah.
But Braille still exists.
But Braille still exists, yeah. Yes, and they're still using it. And we've got it all around the we've got it here in the building. There's the Braille on the toilet doors. When you go into the toilet doors, there's got the raised dots that says toilets. And then when you come up in the lift, it's got the dots on the thing so you know where you are.
Yep. And on the railway station platforms, the handrails.
Yep, they're everywhere.
At the top and the bottom, you've got little raised dots indicating which platform you're
on,
that's
what the raised dots are at the crosswalks when you come to a crosswalk.
Oh, no.
They're for the blind dogs. That's for the guide dogs to know where they are. When they come to those spots, they know they've got to stop.
Because they don't know.
That's raised.
They can't read the raised dots themselves. But they're all dots.
Yeah, yeah.
You're with Gordon, Chris and Phil. Been there, done that. Joy 94.9.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
You're with Chris, Gordon and Phil. Been there, done that. Joy 94.9. Our first show for 2018. We're coming towards the end of it. And
I just noticed on the top of the page, this is show number 784.
Yeah.
Been around a while, been there, done that, hasn't it?
It has.
That's because we've been there and done that.
Well, we've been doing and that and this all over the place.
Have we?
I can't remember half of it.
In the coming week, on the 6th of January, we'll be remembering that the Russian ballet dancer Rudolf Nureyev, he died in 1993. It was interesting that although we called him Russian, he actually defected when he was on one of his world tours.
In Paris.
His bosses sort of knew that he might be
thinking
taken
about
by
it.
The non-communist countries, and they sort of put him on a fairly tight leash. But Rudolf was a little bit sneakier than that, and he did take advantage of being in Paris, and he just snuck away and sought
refuge
or safe harbour.
Yeah.
And he was such an athletic dancer. He reworked the roles within the stories of ballet.
He actually made the male dancer as strong as the female dancer. Before him, the female was the lead and the male dancer just supported the female. But when Rudolf started, he made it so that he was as strong as the female dancer, as the ballerina. So he would have huge solo efforts to do himself, and he just brought the whole of male dancing to the fore rather than being just
and
the supports.
Created equality within ballet.
Sort of, yeah. He was a magnificent dancer. When he used to come to Australia, he used to be at the Palais where I worked.
Another event that happened around about this time, but earlier, 21st of December 1894, South Australia granted women the right to vote.
The second place in the world to do that, after New Zealand. And they gave the vote to the women in South Australia. And then it wasn't until a bit later that the federal government decided that the Australian women could vote, everybody could vote.
Mm-hmm. Not everybody.
Well,
not quite the Aboriginals.
No. But up until Federation, the Aboriginals could, the Indigenous people could vote in South Australia.
Well, South Australia's been ahead of the world for
in lots of ways, yeah.
They had a very interesting premier there for quite a while.
Yes.
Don Dunstan.
But talking about South Australia, it's this during this week that's there.
Well, the last week, 28th of January.
28th of January, it was Proclamation Day. Yes, where they had this bent over tree where they made the proclamation from, and the poor tree now is just basically all concrete.
South Australia was created a colony, a free settlers colony.
By Mr. Angus, the Scottishman.
Yes, another Scotsman. But this was quite separate from the New South Wales, basically the East Coast. In 1836, and that's where the basketball team, the 36ers, gets their name from. We hope that you'll join us next week for hopefully another interesting program of bits and pieces.
One thing I'm going to have to put into this one is the 1st of January is Australia Day, because that's when we became the Commonwealth of Australia.
Well, 1901. I would tend to agree with you on that, Gordon.
Thank you, Chris.
Well, I'll miss Invasion Day.
Well, I won't, because as a West Australian, it meant absolutely nothing to me.
All right then, Gordon. Thank you. Be with you this time next week. Bye for now.
Bye.
Bye.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.